Today's episode of Lighting Up the Marquee is sponsored by Dark Sales Productions. In today's world, video is the best way to share your story. Whether you're looking to market your business or brand on social media, or even share amazing memories like your wedding and other events, Dark Sales Productions is committed to creating the best content and capturing your most precious memories for you. Based in the Chicagoland area, Dark Sales Productions has worked with clients in the past to help market both local businesses and larger brands, capture newlyweds' perfect day, produce short films, and even work with individuals looking to have professional photos and headshots taken. No matter the business occasion or individual, Dark Sales Productions is ready to work with you. All you have to do is visit the website darksalesproductions.com to learn more about them, and you can also contact them to get started on your next project. That's DarkSalesProductions.com. And if you go over there and mention that you listened to this ad on Lighting Up the Marquee, they'll hook you up with some special offers. Once again, that's darksalesproductions.com. All you got to do is mention that you listened to this ad on Lighting Up the Marquee, and some special offers will be there waiting for you. Now, let's get started with today's episode. So we can jump into it awesome. If you guys are ready, if you both are ready.
I'm totally ready. I've been ready all my life.
Awesome. Now that we got Zoom working, welcome back to Lighting Up the Marquee. This is going to be the Halloween episode. I'm joined, actually, thanks to my good friend Haley, who works for this company, Onyx Films. I'm joined by Jordan Pfeiffer and Anastasia Zavodnik. Did I pronounce those right?
Yes, you did.
Awesome. I was trying to figure out how to do it, or like how to pronounce it, because I like getting people's names right.
Yeah.
And then I noticed the Pfeiffer, because I actually had a teacher in high school who had that same like PF spelling.
Yes.
So if you want the
truth, it's actually Pfeiffer, like the first F silent, but like everyone says Pfeiffer because of Michelle Pfeiffer. So I'll go with that. Yeah.
All right. So I did get it wrong.
No, but I'm fine with it. Like,
all right. Well, welcome to the show, both of you.
Thank you.
How are you both doing? I know you guys were on set a few weeks ago, or I don't know if you guys were on set or this past weekend too, right?
We were on set 2 weeks ago for our own project that we produced and did all the creative for, and then we were on set yesterday for one of our members' projects that we were just helping out with.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
So got a lot of busy projects at Onyx right now.
Yes.
Yeah, we're very busy. We have like 6 or 7 projects or something crazy like that going right now.
I noticed on the, because when Haley was on back on October 2nd, she was telling me about the company and like what you guys do and the films you guys have. And I was having a hard time finding the website, and then she had to send me the link. Well, because when you Google Onyx Films, it's a bunch of other things come up, but not your guys' website. So I had to actually go in and type it out how it's supposed to be.
We need to make it easier to search for.
But it's easy when you don't Google it. Like, just don't go through Google.
Okay.
But she sent me the website. I went through it. It's a nice website, very easily laid out. I liked it a lot. But before today's episode, I wanted to get a taste of what you guys do. So I watched Veins and Necromantic on there. Those are the two films you have available right now.
Yeah.
But we can talk about those films in a bit, because I wanted to talk about both of those. I also wanted to talk to you guys about like your guys' startings, your influences, how Onyx essentially came to be. So I will let both of you take the floor on that. Introducing both of you respectively, as well as, again, respectively, your backgrounds and influences into the film industry.
Yeah, well, for me, the film industry was always going to be where I ended up, because I grew up with like a quote unquote, like movie family. Like, they don't work in the industry or anything, but they love movies. So every weekend we would watch a new movie. And I grew up like watching really intense movies like A Clockwork Orange and things like that from like a really young age. And So I just have always been fascinated by movies and making movies and all of that. So that's how I ended up in film school. That was my start. Yeah.
And then for you, Anastasia?
Yeah. So I feel like I was kind of a late bloomer in terms of like being a film kid, but I mean, it's okay. It worked out anyways, but, I came to LA, to be a theater major at USC. And basically I got here and I grew up going to the theater, like how Jordan was a film family. I was like a theater family, like we'd go to the city and like see something usually like once a month, like once every other month. And I just loved like the storytelling aspect on stage and like the live theater experience. And so I was like, cool, like I'll study that in college, like, and see what you can do with it. And, then I got to LA and, it's funny because you come to college and you don't know anybody and you have all this time by yourself. And so I literally just started going to the movies alone, like an absolute loser. And
that's what I do all the time.
And I kind of fell in love. And it's like you come to LA and you're completely immersed in it. Like everywhere you turn, there's like billboards for the Oscars, billboards for, you know, for your consideration, all of that. And then I took one class in the film school and I like completely fell in love and declared a double major. And then I just started making stuff and then me and Jordan met and the rest is history.
And then you both are originally not from LA, correct?
Yeah, I'm from Austin, Texas. So I think that was actually a big part of my film journey because Austin is a huge film city. Like mm-hmm. We got the Duplass brothers and Wes Anderson and Matthew McConaughey and just like a ton of people. So mm-hmm.
yeah, I'm from San Francisco.
Okay, so not too far from LA.
Yeah.
All right. That's pretty good. And then I think on your website I saw you both met at Blumhouse. Wasn't that correct?
Yes.
So
I was yeah.
Yeah, we were both interning there in the feature department. Your film
development department, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, it was a good experience. Like, we loved working there just because mm-hmm.
It's really cool. I feel like, you know, being an intern, no matter what, is, like, a cool educational experience. But, like, mm-hmm. for me, like, the best part of it was just being in the office, like, around everybody. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then we just got really lucky, and I feel like we had a really good intern cohort mm-hmm. that semester. And so, like, we all talk to each other still. We still have our Blumhouse intern group chat, and we all mm-hmm. talk to each other and work on each other's projects. And
yeah.
It was a really cool, like, networking experience, but, like, within people our own age.
How many interns was at, like, Blumhouse? Like, how many did they have, like, at a time?
Like, 10.
10?
Well, yeah, there's one, they always have one post, and then there was about five or six for development, or for TV and for features.
Okay. Yeah, because I remember when I moved out there, I just recently moved out of LA a couple months back, but when I went out there, I was interning at a talent agency, and I don't think I got the best internship experience, just because it was just me as the intern, in a tiny office at a talent agency. I'm not going to get into it too much. I kind of talked a little bit about it on my show that it was not the best experience, but...
Yeah, it's all about the connections you make. Like, I've interned at 6 or 7, like, film development, like, positions, and every time it's about, like, the people that I meet, because a lot of those people are actually, like, in Onyx now, and
mm-hmm.
We share the same love for horror, because most of them have been horror companies, and...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and we're all in the same place in life. So I feel like that's how we get along so well.
And also at the end of the day, it's like, you know, obviously you want to network, especially at internships, with like people who are above you and stuff and who have like taken the path that you want to go down. But like, I think it's equally, if not more important, to network with the people your age, because like they're going to be the ones getting jobs next who are then going to like hook you up with more jobs. Like Jordan's gotten me like 4 jobs now. Mm-hmm. You know, like we're all constantly like referring each other, and like, you know, it's the sort of thing where it's like it's unspoken, like, of course, like if I interned with you, I'm we're friends and like I believe in you, like you're gonna get a rec from me for an internship that I'm at that you want, stuff like that, you know?
Because this industry is like all about collaboration, so yeah
that's how I felt, like again, like at the agency, since it was just me, like I knew like in our program friends at other companies, so like our company names would come up at our respective jobs. But it was always weird being at the agency just at the reception desk and not really like having a chance to communicate with people, or like at least at my job it was like it felt weird to go up to like the, it was like the assistants and then the managers and that was it. There was no like in between each level.
That's scary. That's like intimidating.
Especially when like our clients would come in occasionally and they would come straight up to you. Ooh. And I'm just like, okay. Or like they'll call in, so I have to talk to them on the phone. But I don't know. My experience out in LA was experience, but it was good and bad, I guess. But that's I think everybody's kind of experience.
Yeah. How long were you in LA for?
I moved out in 2018.
Okay.
And I just moved out a couple months back.
Okay.
So I just moved back. Yeah, it was a couple of years. I got a pretty good connections, but they were very like not conventional how I made them. Like I have two cats that I recently adopted from an independent filmmaker that I messaged on Twitter about it. And that's how I made the connection.
That's so random.
That's incredible.
Yeah, and I'm, because this episode comes out the 30th, but I don't know, I'm still working out details. They might be on the show the week before, prior. Ooh, so awesome. I don't know. They're having a film come out this week.
Oh, cool.
So hopefully, fingers crossed, but when this episode drops, people will know.
Yeah.
I wanted to talk, because you guys were both at Blumhouse. You said everybody at Onyx is primarily horror based, and I've noticed with your two films they're very horror driven. Is that basically what Onyx wants to strive to, is becoming like an all-female horror company, or just, I know it's an all-female driven production company and film company, but is horror the only route you guys are gonna go? Or
I don't think we want it to be just horror, right, Anastasia?
No, I think that it felt like the logical jumping off place for us, and it's, for me and Jordan, it's like the aesthetic and the style of filmmaking that we both like and that we both like kind of share an interest in. And also I felt it was a good jumping off place just because I feel like obviously like women are rather underrepresented in the film industry as is, but especially within horror, like you just don't see a whole lot of like female department heads and such. And so it felt like if we start with this, we're doing something different that hasn't been done. But I know that we've talked about it a lot, Jordan and I have, about not wanting it to just be horror, but like just exploring kind of more like tonally dark themes, you know, whether that be like social realism with like a darker tone to it and like darker narratives in that way. I don't think we're going to make a comedy anytime soon. But
we don't like comedy. No. Very dark comedy. Yeah. But yeah, we love horror. That's our favorite genre. But we're open to making more like diverse genres, because a lot of our members especially like prefer like dramas or thrillers or something like that, and we want everyone to be able to make what they're into. But we also like think that the female experience is honestly very easily illustrated by the horror genre, just because there's like the horror of the female experience and like what women have to go through and in life is sometimes horrific. So we've been experimenting with that, and you'll see that in A Boat Beneath a Moonlit Sky, which is coming out on Halloween. Shameless plug.
No, there's no shameless plug here, just plug everything. I wanted to talk a little bit about at least the current films you have right now that are available for everyone to watch, which is Veins and Necromantic.
Yes,
I watched both of those back to back, and I will say I preferred Veins over Necromantic, but because I think the thing about Veins was I'm a big horror fan, but actually I'm not a fan of blood, or like in real life, I can't tolerate blood. And with veins, I was actually getting disgusted because of how realistic the blood was.
Ooh.
I like the realism of the blood, plus the sound design and effects you guys used.
Yeah.
So it was probably one of the most unsettling films I watched.
Awesome.
And like I've seen all like the Saw movies, and they didn't have any effect on me like veins had an effect on me.
Wow, that means so much.
Yeah. And well, if you're looking for the blood, for all my horror filmmakers out there, it's called I Can't Believe It's Not Blood. And since you mentioned the sound design, I wanted to give a big shout out to our sound designer, Sunday Smith.
Love Sunday.
We brought her on. She'd reached out to us like literally a week before we needed sound design, and she dropped everything and like hopped on veins.
She's amazing.
And killed it.
She's like the coolest person you'll ever meet, and she's such a talented sound designer. So
it was great, because not only was also with both the films, I love that there was very little dialogue or very minimal dialogue. It was all like what you're seeing is what you get, and then the effects, the camera work, and the sound design all add to it.
Yeah.
But I think it was the blood, honestly, in veins that was like getting to me. Like I said, I could watch like Nightmare on Elm Street, Johnny Depp's blood geyser all day, and nothing affects me. But the vein blood was so like, I feel like it was, again, realistic, because it was so dark and like gooey looking.
We loved it. Hear that. Shout out to our production designer, Jesse Brown, for making that. Did she make it or did she buy that?
I think we had some that was made, and then we had some that was from the I Can't Believe It's Not Blood bundle.
Yeah. Yeah, she's awesome though. Yeah. She helped with that a lot.
It was great. And then I think it kind of carries over into Necromantic, because the two films have very different styles.
Yeah.
They're very different horror styles. Veins was very like, I don't know if it's guerrilla filmmaking is the right word, or like, it felt very much like a fly on the wall kind of thing. Like we're watching, because there's a lot of shots where you're like behind a plant. So you're just like looking in and you can't do anything.
Realistic, maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe natural.
Yeah, where you're just watching, but you can't, like, you as an audience can't do anything or, like, help prevent it, but you're just along for the ride. Where Necromantic very much was, like, the style and the lighting was, like, a Winding Refn film. Very much, like, those color schemes.
Very stylized. Yeah.
Very stylized, very, I wanted to ask you about it, because I don't know if it's very ambiguous or if there is, like, a concrete answer or like meaning to the film, but like his movies are very like ambiguous, I guess, or like there's very much interpretation,
right? Like you're wondering like what the meaning of Necromantic is, like what the message is supposed to be, that kind of thing.
Yeah, sort of the kind of thing, because like you can watch it and get what's going on,
yeah,
but I don't know if there's very much like you intended it one way but people can interpret it another way.
For sure, yeah. So Necromantic is actually my junior thesis at Loyola Marymount University. And so our curriculum is kind of weird. For our junior thesis, we're not allowed to use dialogue. Mm-hmm. So that was why there's no dialogue in it. Otherwise, I probably would have put some in there, even though I'm more of a visual person versus more talky stuff. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, it's about this girl who loves another girl, and that girl's not into her, so she makes the love potion, and things just keep going wrong with the potion. She's not very focused or good at following instructions, which stems from me and my life. it's sort of like when, I don't want to spoil too much, but when she's not able to really win her over that way, she takes matters into her own hands and like takes control over it and does it herself. So in a way, it's kind of about like controlling someone. And sometimes you would prefer to have control over them than to actually have like mutual love and like respect.
Yeah, that's kind of what I got at the end, especially. I don't know, it was like a Criminal Minds kind of thing.
Yeah.
There was like an episode about that.
Really?
Not about that, but it's about it's like this lady who's obsessed with dolls And like,
I've seen that one.
It's that scary. One's good.
Yeah.
I'm on a Criminal Minds binge right now. Awesome. And in between that, I have to do like Brooklyn Nine-Nine or something to even it out. But no, both of them are very, they're very good, very different styles, which I thought was a very good effect, especially because it'll show like your company doesn't make the same film over and over again.
Right.
They're both in the style of horror, but they're not the same like genre of horror.
Yeah, I would say that A Boat Beneath the Moonlit Sky, which is coming out, is probably more like necromantic. Would you say the same, Anastasia?
Yeah, it was funny that you brought up Criminal Minds, because there's definitely a Criminal Minds-y aspect to the new one that's coming out.
Yeah.
But I would say, I mean, it's similar. I feel like stylistically-wise and also just color scheme-wise, I realized when we were looking at the cut of it.
I love that kind of color.
I know. But I think there's something more whimsical about this one than necromantic. Necromantic was more like
sexy
coming of age high school. This one is a little bit more like whimsical. Yeah.
Whimsical, yeah. Yeah. We definitely want to play with a bunch of different like tones and styles. Yeah.
Like at least from what I've seen on the next film, is it's very like there's almost like an innocence to it, because it's got like an Alice in Wonderland theme, right?
Yes, and that is actually the
theme. Happy by saying that, because that is our theme. We wanted to come back to the idea of innocence, and this kind of has to do with like our horror of the female experience sort of general thing that we try to go through with our films, is that, you know, so often women's innocence is taken from them before they want it to be. Mm-hmm. And so we really wanted to make a film that highlighted that, but then also highlighted taking that innocence back. And so that's why we kind of ran with the whole Alice in Wonderland thing, but it's very creepy.
extra creepy.
Some shrooms, and it's great.
Drugs in there.
Yeah.
It should be good. If it's like Veins and Necromantic, there's like a good pattern going along with all of your films coming out.
Thank you.
I was gonna say, yeah, like there is a lot, like you said, with the horrors of like what women have to go through. Mm-hmm. I think that's a good method to go along, especially with the horror genre. There's all these like horror tropes, especially with women. Especially with like all the slasher films, like the Final Girl trope.
Yes.
And it's like those tropes everyone's sick of seeing. So it's like, it's good to see a refreshing take on the horror genre and new stories, because everyone's sick of, again, the final trope of, or the final girl, sorry. And the, just like the, or like the faceless killer, everyone's like sick of seeing them root for them sort of thing.
Yeah. I actually just wrote an essay about Final Girls and like how that's just like a stereotype that's perpetuated like kind of against women, and like it really made me think about how we as a company really want like women to take back their power and to not be the victim, to be the main character and to be strong. And that's really what we're trying to do with this company, because like women aren't just the victim, like very powerful beings. So
I think I remember reading an essay a while back about Texas Chainsaw Massacre and how they basically were talking about like exploitive films in the 70s. They were basically saying they only called it that because they showed like a focus group, like a man being killed, and they didn't have a reaction versus a woman being killed. And that's why like, there's more of like, in I think Texas Chainsaw, the woman gets put on the meat hook, I think.
Yeah.
If I remember right. And people were saying how that was more terrifying than if like a man just got put up there.
That's so interesting.
And it was like a very interesting essay about how we see like a man being killed versus if like a woman.
Yeah.
There's a lot of weird psychology that goes into horror films that not a lot of people realize.
Totally. There's a lot of psychology, and that's actually like one of my favorite things ever is psychology. And like, that's what I would be a psych major if I wasn't a film major, because I feel like they do go hand in hand though. So
they do.
Yeah.
There's a lot. Well, I mean, psychological horror, there is like a whole genre about it.
We love that, don't we, Anastasia?
Was that, Yeah, I wanted to talk about like some genres that influence both of you with like especially horror, because there's so many subgenres to it. And you mentioned Clockwork Orange, which isn't necessarily a conventional horror film, but it is has horror themes throughout it.
Yeah, it's like Clockwork Orange is, I feel like, more like a horrific sci-fi, like, because it is sci-fi and it's set in this like weird futuristic world where like it's like anarchy and that kind of thing. I mean, I love like kind of darker sci-fi, and that's actually a film that we're producing right now. Noxious is a bit of a darker sci-fi. Love that. Love psychological horror. Honestly, I love like kind of more of a psychosexual horror, like, because there's a lot to be said about that kind of thing, and I think that's something that me and Anastasia really want to make more about. And we actually love like coming of age films.
Yeah, we do. Well, so,
yeah, or like not even that, but like slice of life. Slice of life.
That's what we're gonna try to do next. That's like very preliminary in the works. But yeah, I would say that's probably my, outside of horror, that's like my favorite genre. I love like the social realism. Like slice of life, talk about her all the time. One of my favorite directors is Eliza Hittman. And I just love like where it feels like you're watching something and it's just kind of a normal thing that you're watching, but you're not supposed to be watching it. Oh, if that makes sense.
Love that.
But within horror, actually, it's funny. It's the whole reason I wanted to work at Blumhouse. I love more than anything just a high concept horror film, you know, where you literally just describe it in like three or four words, like The Purge, you know, all crime is legal. And so I really love those. And that's why Blumhouse was like my dream internship. I just think there's something so fun about it. It's something kind of mindless, you know, to like be able to like watch these high concept things and just be kind of shocked for a little bit. Which is really cool. And I love psychological horror too. Jordan introduced me to one of my favorite films of all time, Creep and Creep 2 with Mark.
Yeah, that's a Duplass film. Mark Duplass directed it, or not directed it, stars in it. And is it Patrick Bryce?
Yeah.
Patrick Bryce directed it. Yeah.
Did Duplass write it? I feel like he had something to do with.
He didn't, but they didn't have a full screenplay for it. They like outlined it a little bit and they let him like go for it.
Yeah, I thought I heard like the script was 20 pages and it was pretty much just scenarios.
Yeah,
and
exactly. It was like all so Duplass. I love that too. I think that's cool.
I think that's how Duplass rolls. Like that's how his scripts are, and that's how his show The League was. They would just write the scenes like point A and point B, and they would let them all the comedians go.
Yeah, we love naturalistic horror, but then also high concept horror. I don't know. We love everything about horror. Yeah. I feel like.
I was on a binge this whole quarantine of like cheesy 70s, 80s slasher films and all these like Roger Corman movies. And it was a trip just going through all those films, and especially Scream Factory just released their Friday the 13th box set. So I've been finishing up that series.
Yeah, actually, I just saw Friday the 13th Part 5 at a drive-in, and that was my first time watching Friday the 13th.
Jason's not even in that one.
I know, but that one is so good. I actually really liked that one. It was so fun.
That's the one where, that's the one where, like, the fat guy's eating a candy, and then the bully just kills him? Like, I don't know.
That character is so weird. At first, I was put off by how kind of like weird and exaggerated all the characters were, like the guy eating the candy. But once the kills started happening, I was like, yes, because they're the coolest kills. Like, just so inventive.
I think it's part 4 and part 1 that Tom Savini does the effects for it. And I'm all about the Tom Savini special effects with like all the George Romero movies he did and the couple slashers he did.
Cool. Yeah, if my boyfriend was here, he'd talk your head off about slashers, because he's obsessed with slashers.
Mm-hmm.
So he's going to show me more eventually. But I haven't seen a lot of more classic ones. Have you, Anastasia?
Yeah, I've seen a couple. I feel like I'm into more modern horror, which is sad, and I need to educate myself. But
no, I agree. I think I am too.
I love, this isn't like old horror, but I love The Final Destination.
Oh, that's a good one.
Those are classics.
So much.
There's like, I don't know. For me, I'm all about all the horror films. There's some new horror films I do not like, or like tropes now that are happening that
like
I don't like.
But I'm so curious.
I don't like the ghost face. I think it's stupid. Like where you'll have a character, like a ghost face, and their mouth just stretches super long.
Like what's that in?
What is it? There's a lot that it's like a lot of those. I think it's Paranormal Activity does it. And then like every copycat after that was trying to do that. I think Grave Encounters does it, but I like Grave Encounters.
Oh, I love Grave Encounters. I just saw that recently.
That's a good one. Like the concept of that film is so cool.
Wait, yeah, did you see Ready or Not?
Yeah, I like that one.
Okay.
I like Ready or Not.
Good. It's like my favorite film of the past like 5 years.
But she gets a lot of shit for it.
I get so much shit for it, and I'm obsessed with it.
Why? It's so good.
It's so good.
People are so mean. They're like, I like it.
It's good. It's a good concept. That's like something I wish I would have thought of. Like,
right?
As like a,
I know. Yeah, it's brilliant.
I like that. See, that's another high concept thing, I feel like.
Yeah, you see, I love the high concept. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm more of like a Suspiria gal, like a more artsy. That's why I like Necromancer.
Like the new Suspiria or the
I love
old school.
The new Suspiria.
The new one's great.
Yeah, I love the old one too, though. I like because the old one is so like emotional, and the new one is so like cold on a little bit, and like
the new one like is a remake, but it takes the concept of the first one and kind of improves it.
Yes.
Or like it gives it more of a story versus like I think the original was like here's a concept and let's run with it.
Yeah, the story for the first one is pretty much non-existent, but the story for 2018 is so good.
It's so good. The payoff is worth it for like the whole long movie that it is.
Dakota Johnson and also Tilda Swinton being two characters.
Just three.
Three characters. The German man, the fact no one knew she was the German man on set, that I'm just obsessed with that.
I love it.
And the original actress from Suspiria is in the remake.
Right, she's the wife.
Of Tilda Swinton, yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, like, I don't know, there's like tropes now. I think for me, it's like a lot of the found footage movies that are kind of dying off.
Yeah.
They're kind of going away. I feel like it was the period between 2007 and maybe 2015 where it's like those horror films are kind of like all the same, or they just kept doing one genre.
Yeah.
Well, we're going to try to do it differently.
Yeah. We're actually working on a found footage now.
I'm not trying to dog found footage, but it's like they got one idea and they didn't change anything up for like every film.
Yeah.
That's very true.
I think it's very true.
Because there's so much you can do with it, but they just stick to one thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, like Creep is like an example of like a more unique.
Yeah.
Or it's like, I feel like they just kept running with the trope, at least in the Paranormal Activity movies, where it's like the security camera will go one way and turn the other way, and it just constantly does that.
Yeah.
And that's like, that's another trope I don't like.
Yeah.
I don't know. There's just weird tropes. I'm just weird about my horror movies.
Yeah, like, no, like, having tropes that are overdone is not fun. Like, you know exactly what's gonna happen. It's cheesy. There's definitely a lot of opportunity for horror movies to be cheesy. You know?
Or it's also not necessarily a new trope, but I hate the false jump scare where it's like a friend will show up and then like the music sting comes in.
Yeah.
But that's always been a thing. There's the other one I think I can't stand is at the very end of the film, like a face will just jump out and scare the audience for one last scare.
Right.
But it's like, who is the, like, in, you put yourself in that world, where's the camera that this character is looking at?
Yeah.
It's just weird.
Yeah.
It's kind of like almost just like the convenient scares, you know, like, no, just you have to work for it more.
Well, it's like Sinister. I was all on board for Sinister up until the very last shot where he just jumped out.
Love Sinister.
And I do too. It's just that last part.
For Sinister, I like the hanging visual, but like that's like the scariest part of the whole movie. It's like
I liked when there's a shot I like where Ethan Hawke's walking and then the girl's face just comes out of nowhere, but like the way they had it framed up was good.
Yeah, that one's a good one. I really like that movie.
The second one was pretty good too. I liked Sinister too. I think that's like an unpopular opinion, but I said it.
I know I saw the director of that directed a couple episodes of Bly Manor this year.
Really? Have you watched it yet? I just watched the pilot.
Yeah, I watched the whole series. Actually, my last episode I did. I did a whole spoiler talk episode with my friend Arsenio. Ooh. Where we kind of like deep dived into a couple of the episodes.
Ooh, yeah. Well, I'm really liking it so far.
It's different from Hill House. That's all I'll say. And we kind of really talk about it, how it's don't compare it to Hill House, otherwise you're not going to like it as much, but it's still good. It's much more of a slower burn than Hill House was.
Interesting. I didn't like Hill House.
Oh.
I quit Hill House halfway through. Yeah.
Yeah, I was bored.
That's how I almost was with Bly Manor, but it was like the last three episodes got me interested in it.
Yeah. So you liked Hill House?
I liked Hill House, yeah. I haven't here's the thing, I watched it, and then I watched it again within a week at with some other people, and then I haven't seen it since.
Yeah, right.
It was like one of the things where I really liked it when it came out, but I haven't wanted to go back yet.
Yeah. Have you guys heard of, there's a show, okay, I'm blanking on the name, but like each episode is a new thing, and it's like, there's one, it's like about an island. I gotta look this up because it's a horror show.
Is it a creep show or no?
No. I have to watch it for a class.
It's not the Blumhouse project, right?
No.
I don't know what that's. Welcome to the Blumhouse.
Is that what it's called?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's weird. It's not even. I've watched like three of them now. And they're not like related to each other in any way. They are all like 90 minutes. It was basically just a dump, you know, like it was like a movie dump.
That's what I saw. And I was like, I don't know what, cause I kept seeing him like Jason promote it. And I was like, I don't know what this is. It's just like, it seemed like they were just throwing it out.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, that's essentially what it was. I think it was because they were teamed up with Amazon, and so like they just wanted to brand it in some way. And that's how.
Yeah,
they
I went to like the live experience for that. It's online, and they give you like case files, and you have to like solve this mystery. And there's like four different levels of this house, and like
maybe that sounds fun.
Well, I did it, but it was so hard to figure it out. And like each room gave you a bunch of clues, and yeah. And then they had Questlove DJ before.
Why did I not go to this with you? I'm upset.
It was online. You had to RSVP.
No.
But okay, I figured out the show. It's called Castle Rock.
Oh, isn't that the Stephen King?
Oh, sorry, Channel Zero. Channel oh, okay. Zero. Yeah. Have you guys heard of that?
No. I haven't heard of Castle Rock, not Channel Zero.
Channel Zero is supposed to be really, really good.
What's it on?
So each season is a new like theme. I don't know what it's on. Sorry, let me check that. I think it's on Amazon, maybe.
Okay. Or yeah. Hulu. I feel like I've seen it, but it was one of those things where you skip past it.
Yeah. But this guy is like raving about it. He's my group member because we have to study. We have to study a horror TV show, and so
that's fun. Yeah.
There's like not a lot of horror TV shows. That's like a weird thing. Like horror is such a big genre, and they have so many movies and genres. But like conventional television or like all these networks don't put enough horror like out.
I don't know. I was like trying to think about why that is too, because like I love horror and I don't particularly like horror TV shows. Like I would rather just get my whole horror in like 90 minutes, you know?
Maybe that's what it is like people who like horror movies or like people who want the horror experience just want that like quick like 90 minute experience of thrills and then move on, where like something like a Hill House or Bly Manor is like 10 hours of commitment.
Exactly. And like, I got so bored by it.
I think
also, I feel like you can't draw out a monster.
That's what I was going to say, is I think it's hard to create suspense over a TV show. It's so much easier to create suspense and like, you know, that kind of thing within a small chunk, like a TV.
I think for Hill House, that's what it was for me, is that like, I'd already seen the, like the scary thing in it. And so I was like, well, like, I don't feel the need to keep watching for six more hours to see the scary thing do more scary things.
Yeah. It's like it's kind of like the don't show your monster too soon.
Yeah.
Thing where it's like, just build it up and then reveal it. Don't show it up front. And then everyone knows what it looks like. So that they're not scared anymore.
Yeah, definitely.
That was like my issue with A Quiet Place, is the monster shows up in the first 2 minutes.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I rewatched that over quarantine, and I was like, this movie's boring. Like, I liked this when it came out.
Yeah, it's just, it's hard with that one, just because, like, the fact that they have to be quiet is really suspenseful, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And the birthing scene, like.
Oh, yeah.
That nail in the foot.
Nail in the foot. That's gold. Both of those.
Nail in the foot.
Yeah.
I don't think I had a reaction to nail. Like, again, I don't have a reaction to like that stuff, but veins, I have like unsettledness.
Oh, well, yeah. I think we made veins like as visceral as possible. Yeah.
Wait, Tim, can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
Okay. What was your, like, reaction to veins from like the male perspective? Because it was really interesting, because when we released it, I had like my female friends watched it, and they weren't quite as receptive to it. Like, they like one of them was like, I just shut it off, I was too uncomfortable. And then I had my male friends actually like reach out to me and be like, yo, I watched this, and like, I get that, like, I don't really understand what it's about, but, like, I get what you were saying, and I was so deeply unsettled and affected by it.
Yeah, like, males have been more unsettled by this than, I think, females, and, like, more affected, yeah.
Yeah, which is kind of not what we were anticipating.
I think I was more unsettled by it because I don't like blood.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'll tell a quick story. Like, I had to get blood drawn after I was in, like, a car accident. And they were just going to put like an IV in me, but I didn't think blood was going to get drawn. And I was like, I'll look away, I don't want to see it. And then I turn over, and as soon as I see the blood start coming out, I was like, nope, like, can't do it. No.
Yeah.
That was like the only, sorry, what?
Women have to see blood a lot and deal with blood a lot.
Well, that's the thing, is like, I was only unsettled by that, but I was like, more interested in seeing what was going on, or like why she was doing it.
Yeah.
But then once like I got to the end, I was like, okay, everything makes sense. Like, I could probably watch it again and not be as, I think it was the initial sight of how realistic that blood was
right.
The only reason I got that unsettled, but
I'm glad about it. Realistic.
It was very realistic.
I'm so glad.
I had flashbacks to the IV going in.
Yeah.
That's about it. Cause again, like, I can watch Friday the 13th, see Jason like cut people in half, no problem. Cause I know it's all fake, and even they make it really look fake.
Yeah.
But it was very realistic in veins, where I was like, okay, like, I can get down with this. Or like, this is actually like doing its job to make me like unsettled.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Oh, cool.
Versus like just a slasher where it's like people getting cut in half, and it's like, okay. Or that's like Saw, people getting tortured.
Yeah, this is more fun and like less like, oh, it's scary.
Yeah.
Well, and it's the fact that it's only like 7 minutes or 7 or 8 minute short film, versus like you watch the Saw franchise and it's the same thing every movie.
Yeah, you know,
you get over it. Even going into like the second one, you're like, I know what to expect. There's not a shock.
Yeah.
But that's about it, I think. That was like why I got unsettled, just because I'm personally not a fan of blood, or that's why I've never like donated blood at school, because I'm like, I'm gonna get grossed out,
yeah,
sort of thing.
Yeah,
that's about it. But I did like it. I liked the very end with the. I don't want to spoil it. I'll let people go. I'll let people go to your website and watch it.
Thank you.
Thanks.
I won't spoil it. It's 7 minutes. Just go watch it.
Onyx-films.com.
Onyx-hyphen. Make sure that's there.
Hyphen is so important.
Don't Google it, because I even Googled Onyx-films and it didn't come up.
So sad. I need to figure that out.
We like talk about this after, Jordan.
Yeah, I didn't know.
You gotta figure out the algorithm to put it at the top.
I know, the algorithm.
It was like, I don't know what company came up. It was like another Onyx. I don't even know if it was another film company. It was just onyx.com.
Plain rude. We should
just rude.
I know.
Or it's like the Pokemon Onyx comes up.
Oh my god, I love Pokemon.
Right?
Yeah, I collected Pokemon cards as a kid.
I didn't get into Pokemon cards. I never got it. Like, or people would play Pokemon, I guess. Like, it was a game, but I never got the rules.
Yeah, like some just have more like HP and like are more feisty than the others, so they beat the other ones.
It was always like at my school, like you either had Pokemon or Yu-Gi-Oh.
Oh yeah, Yu-Gi-Oh.
I remember people went more toward Yu-Gi-Oh. That was like legit.
I feel like that was more of a boy thing. Like
Yu-Gi-Oh. I think so.
Yeah.
Those series too are weird. How like they made shows to capitalize off of their just merchandise.
Yeah, that's so weird.
But then they had such huge fan bases, the shows.
Yeah.
I was not one of those kids.
You were not. You said going to the movies by yourself was a loser.
I know.
That's what I do all the time. It's relaxing.
Oh, I love it. I would prefer to go to the movies by myself than with somebody. Because I think it's a solo experience.
It's because you're not interacting with people at the theater, so it's like, it was weird. I would always go to the Universal one, the IMAX there.
No way, same. I work at Universal Studios, and so I go there.
Dude, I did too. I worked at Universal.
Wait, in what department?
I was at the food department.
No way, you're gonna die when I tell you what I do there.
You're gonna die.
I am Scooby-Doo.
What? I walk past Scooby-Doo every day. I had to go to Gru's lab.
No way. Yeah, I was Scooby-Doo.
Gru's lab.
It was either, that's where I was mainly at for like the summer, because they didn't have it open when it was dead season.
Oh. Wait, did you ever do Horror Nights then?
Mm-hmm. I got stories from Horror Nights.
Oh.
I told Travis Barker to go to the back of the line.
No way. Were you a performer or a...
I was food still.
You were food still?
I was at, they had me scheduled at Springfield most of Horror Nights.
Interesting. Yeah.
I had some ladies, so for anyone that knows like the Universal layout, there's an upper level and a lower level. Mm-hmm. And I was at Springfield and some lady came up to me and asked if they were on the lower lot. And I think I looked at her and I was like, at what point did you go downstairs? Horror Nights was something else.
Yeah, it really was. Yeah.
I got upset because I think it was one of the first nights Rob Zombie was there for the House of a Thousand Corpses maze.
Yeah.
And I was at take five.
I saw that's like I've worked at Universal for a year now and I've met celebrities as Scooby, but I met more celebrities in my 3 months working Horror Nights than I like ever have anywhere else in LA.
It's because they only go for Horror Nights.
Yeah.
It was Universal's a weird experience, but it's fun.
It is. I've been wanting to write a show about working in a theme park because it's obviously so funny.
That would be our comedy that we would do.
That would be the only comedy I would do, and it would still be dark.
Because my buddy Arsenio that was on, we were working at Gru's one time, and we had some guests come up, and we've heard all these weird requests for food, and this guest comes up, and they had a nacho bowl, and he's like, can I get the nachos, but no chips? And like everybody like looked at each, we were like, it was a good day, a good flow. Everyone stopped at that moment, looked at each other. I looked at a few people in line, we're all like, did he just say that?
So why can't he just ask for cheese? Like,
he was like, I just want the toppings, just like load a plate up of toppings. And we're just like, I'll give you the normal serving. Like, that's weird.
That's so gross. Mm-hmm.
I got like a bunch of stories about people in the food. Like, just guests.
I have so many guest stories from.
I bet. I was like wondering about like with character actors and everything.
Yeah, it's a little wild.
That's what I've heard. I want to know these stories at some point.
Yeah, there's a lot of them. So might be stories for a different day.
I remember I'd always, because I'd go past the Scooby-Doo characters and there'd be like the long line, and I'd like, they would wrap around and I would try to like, I'd like push people out of the way, like, move, I gotta get to my shift.
Yeah,
I gotta clock in a minute.
I've had people chase me when we've been closed, pull my tail. Kids have shoved their hands up and grabbed my human face before.
What? Like kids or adults?
Yeah, like kids.
Adult. Like,
yeah, that would be insane if it was an adult.
Yeah, I've been picked up. Lots of crazy stuff has happened to me.
I know, like, I think they, like, because they chase you down, too, when you're going back to the back lot or, like, to the behind the scenes. They'll, like, chase you up to that gate.
They will, and they don't realize we can't see. And so then I've tripped over kids. Like,
oh, no.
Yeah.
Poor girl. It's,
Universal is something else.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, Horror Nights is, I remember, I think a scare actor tried scaring me when I was off the clock. And I was like, I'm in uniform, like.
Yeah. Horror Nights, I probably have even more stories from. Because you just get accidentally hit all the time.
Mm-hmm. Horror Nights, because, like, for us in the food department, we're the ones that are selling the alcohol to people. So, like, we're more on top of everything. Because people literally will just buy a beer and chug it in front of you. Just to buy another beer.
Yeah.
I kind of relate to that, though. Because when I was at Horror Nights, it's like, you kind of need alcohol. Because those lines are ridiculous.
People will wait hours for a 10-minute, 5-minute maze.
Yep, I went one time. I went last year. And I don't know. I needed the flash pass or something to go back. Because
last year and you didn't tell me?
Yeah, I did. I told you. You probably forgot, though. You were really busy. I went through the US maze, too.
Aww. Yeah.
They, with that, they gave us the employee preview night, so we got to go through all the mazes before everybody. And I remember my girlfriend and I were going through the Killer Clown maze, and one of the clowns hit her on accident.
Oh,
and
no.
she yelled HR, and then I look over and the guy's, like, hiding behind the door because he didn't want to come out after that.
That maze was cool. I like the Killer Clown.
That one was good. That one, I don't know. Did you have those shifts during Horror? Or no, because you were Scooby, so you didn't have the shifts during Horror Nights, right? Or were you like a?
I did do both a couple of times. But I could never work Scooby on the same day I was working Horror Nights.
Were you a different character? Who were you on Horror Nights? Or
I was in the US maze for Horror Nights.
Okay.
That one was so cool.
I think it was the House of 1,000 Corpses was my favorite from last year.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, that one was good.
I like the Creepshow one.
I didn't do that one because someone told me, they're like, it's just a bunch of screens, like not a lot of people. And I was like, oh, that's kind of lame.
It was fun.
I remember the other maze I liked was the Holidays in Hell. Just because
I loved that one.
One of the venues I worked, the baby at the very end, the New Year's baby, would just chase people. And he would chase people into the venue.
I don't know if this is like, if I would get in trouble for saying this or not, but the same girl who played the New Year's baby plays Cindy Lou Who in Grinchmas every year.
No way. So she's very small?
Yeah, she's tiny.
So funny. That's like my favorite, like, fact.
Cindy Lou Who. Love that.
It was also funny, like working Take Five, like all the scare actors would come in and they're just, because it's like they're just people, but like out on the, they're just scaring everybody. So at Take Five, I was just like, how's it going?
Yeah.
those shifts were the worst at Take Five.
Oh yeah.
During Horror Nights.
The hours were the worst. I mean, I was working two internships and going to school at the same time. And I think Jordan, you worked with me at Blumhouse on Mondays, right? So you would see me the Monday after, because I would
get
home around 3 or 4 AM from Horror Nights, and then I'd have to be in the office at Blumhouse at 9 AM. And so I was getting just like 2 hours of sleep.
Yeah, but you were always working hard, typing away over there. So you did it.
Never again.
Never again. Horror Nights like messed with everybody's sleep. I know one of my friends in the food department was like, had a shift during Horror Nights where he had to close at 3 and then he had to open at 7. So he ended up just sleeping in the parking lot at Universal.
I couldn't.
Or I don't know if, I feel like he called off because he's like, no, I'm not opening.
Yeah, I would like bring my laptop to work sometimes, and in between like sets, I would be doing coverage. Like, really, I'd be like reading scripts for work.
You're crazy, girl.
They had everybody busy during Horror Nights. That was like prime time at Universal.
You know, sad it's not happening this year.
I know, they had the mazes getting built. I was bummed about that.
Aww.
There's supposed to be an Invisible Man one, too, from what I heard, and I loved that movie.
I was speculating they were going to do something with that, because I was trying to figure out what movies were coming out and what mazes they would do to tie in.
Yeah, did you see Invisible Man?
The Elizabeth Moss?
Yeah.
Yeah, I saw that one.
I saw it 3 times in theaters right before everything shut down.
I think the last movie I saw in theaters was Impractical Jokers right before the quarantine.
The last one I saw was The Hunt, actually.
I had tickets to see that. I had tickets to see that and Bloodshot the same day, but then everything was getting crazy, so I was like, I'll just cancel my tickets and not go.
It was so funny because I went to go see, I was back up home in the Bay Area visiting, and I went to go see The Hunt, and I was the only person in the movie theater because I went at like 2 p.m. on a Thursday. And when I got out, my phone was blowing up, and I had all these emergency alerts from like San Francisco County and my mom, and it was literally the day that they were getting locked down and not letting people to leave anymore. And so then I had to literally hop on a bus that night to get back to LA so I wouldn't be stuck there.
They were doing that in Glendale where I was living. They would send out the text alerts about like curfew, and then they would send like 2 minutes later another one that was like, oh, your curfew's in 30 minutes.
Yeah.
It was
we're
nuts.
Doing a real life horror movie right now.
Honestly,
right? I was like trying to come up with a pandemic quarantine horror movie idea, like based around everything, where it's like a virus is outside, but like it's kind of like a slasher where like inside they're stuck with a killer.
Yeah, oh.
But they can't leave because it's like a virus is out there.
That's kind of cool. I like that.
I wanted to work on that, but I feel like someone already is gonna do that.
Well, now everyone's going to take your idea. Cause,
right? I got to do it before someone... I got to copyright it before someone takes it.
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah, like you said, we're just living in a horror movie right now.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, living... it's very weird and post-apocalyptic. Like, that's what... Like, we're making Noxious about... Kind of about this. Well, it's inspired by... Corona, I would say, because it's like set in the future and the air quality is like you can't breathe the air, so everyone has to wear gas masks, and the world's about to end because of global warming and pollution and that kind of thing.
Yeah, I was gonna ask you if you wanted to talk about Noxious a little bit, because that's your next one after the one coming out on Halloween.
It might be. We have like 3 on our slate right now. We're not sure when they're going to be released or not. But Noxious is the one that we've been in pre-production for it for months now. So
yeah, Noxious is my senior thesis. So we were going to make it this semester, but then we got a lot of restrictions, like COVID-19 restrictions. And so we really weren't able to make it due to all those restrictions. So we have to push it back to February. So we're going to shoot probably like second weekend of February. But yeah, we've been working really hard on it. We have our main actors, our 2 actors are like a real life couple. Their names are Brittany and Lizzie, and we love them so much. So it's really been in the works for a while.
Yeah, I was going to ask because you've been filming your shorts as well. What are the restrictions they're giving you for being on set with everything that's happening?
Yeah, well, we've taken it upon ourselves to make our own kind of restrictions.
Right.
Yeah, like we Anastasia has like a contactless thermometer gun.
I feel like I kind of end up always being the unofficial COVID safety monitor, but I mean, the thing is that we are doing it independently without any unions, so there aren't any like rules we have to abide by, but we do have our own place. So we require all of our crew members to supply a negative COVID test within 3 days before shooting. Everyone gets temperature checked at the door. All crafty and meals is individually packaged. Everyone has to hand sanitize like a certain amount of times. And masks are worn on set at all times unless eating, and eating has to be done outside, and unless you're on camera talent. So we've now done 3 shoots in this way, and knock on wood, like, we've stayed healthy and we've been good about it. And so I feel like,
yeah, I think the COVID tests are a big part of it. Cause if we didn't have those negative results, it could be much worse.
Mm-hmm. And we're like very strict about that too. Like this past weekend, we were supposed to shoot on Saturday and we moved it to Sunday because 2 people didn't have their COVID test results back. And we were like, we're not going to shoot.
Risking it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's very good to have like those precautions, because they haven't really set those rules. I've mentioned on the show, it's being weird going from LA back to Indiana and just seeing the difference across the country, like how people are handling it. And even in Indiana, it's very like people are doing it half-assedly. It's so weird. I was even at the mall the other day, like just walking around, like everyone's wearing masks, but I was walking behind this one family and none of them had masks. But every store in the mall was, you need a mask to get in.
Yeah, I don't understand that at all. Like, just wear a mask.
It's like not that hard to wear.
Not that hard.
Exactly. People, like, I'm currently working at Whole Foods and I get 8-hour shifts, and people complain about wearing a mask when they're shopping for 30 minutes. And I'm like, dude, I'm wearing this for 8 hours. Like,
also, as someone who wears a mask for a living, that's a lot larger than the ones that people have to wear for COVID. Mm-hmm. Absolutely breathe in it, I promise you.
Yeah, I hate like the parents that say they have like respiratory issues or something.
If you got respiratory issues, why are you out? Like, yeah. Stay home. It's like, I don't, because it's weird. People do that argument where it's like, I have a medical condition, and then you can't ask them legally after that, like, what it is, because
yeah,
that's why they always do it. Like, some lady came up to us, no mask, and was like, oh, I can't wear it, I have a medical condition. And then they let her in because her husband was in there.
What?
But they didn't give her a mask. And I guess she's there every week with a new excuse.
That puts you guys at risk, too. Yeah. Like, they need to think about their employees.
Well, not only that, but it's also, like, our prime drivers. Like, yeah. Very, very much are half-assed. Like, they're supposed to have masks and gloves before they enter. But sometimes they don't put their gloves on. They'll put them in their pocket and just walk back.
No.
And I'm like, nah, stay away from me.
This is why the pandemic's going to last a very long time.
Yep. It's very much like people that just don't listen.
Yeah.
And Americans, especially.
Yep. I think I tweeted, like, you can't spell America without me or I, and no you.
Absolutely. So it's like, absolutely.
That's how people are. It sucks.
I know. It's so sad.
But it's good that seeing like productions like your guys' and other big scale productions are going back with COVID precautions. So it's good that at least that we're still getting people working.
No, totally. Like, I'm getting a lot of DMs on our Instagram account, like, that we've inspired people to keep working on projects, and like, you know, like, just because COVID is happening doesn't mean there aren't ways that you can make projects. Like, and it's funny because our film schools are teaching us that, like, they're not teaching us ways that we should be able to, like, thrive in this environment as filmmakers. And we're just figuring out ourselves, and we're, like, doing better than...
There's actually, like, a lot to be said, I feel like, about the kids in film school right now, because our schools have basically completely abandoned us.
I think that's what, because I'm from Columbia, where Haley was also from, and I don't know.
James.
Oh, really?
You know him, James Auction.
I feel like I've passed by him.
Okay.
I don't know if like we've ever sat down and like hung out, but I think the name has passed by.
That's how I know Haley. Yeah, through James.
Yeah, I think Haley mentioned, I think on this show or to me at some point, that I was her introduction to film and like productions, because I casted her in my freshman short. And that was her very first film project.
She's awesome. We love her.
She is. That was a great project to work on. And then we made her the lead because we had problems with our actor in it. Like, they were both like supporting, but we made her like the We're like, all right, you're going to be the lead because you can handle this better.
Yeah.
But I don't know if Columbia is doing anything. I think they're online now. I don't know what they were doing.
Yeah. I mean, we're all online, and like for our productions, they're just halting all of them, unless they're grad productions, but all the undergrad, they're just halting all of them. But some of them have, like, you can make your junior or senior thesis for us if you have like three people that are quarantined together and you do all these restrictions, but it's so limiting.
That's basically the same for USC too. Like, they're allowing people to make their senior theses, but they're being done completely over Zoom. And I've seen, because some of my friends are making them, and it's cool, like, the way that they're adapting it. They're literally building miniature sets that are this big, and literally, like, almost like doing claymation.
Yep, I've had a bunch of people animating things.
But it's also like, we're paying an ungodly amount of money to go to a school with some of the most insane film resources that we're not allowed to use. So I'm actually working, another shameless plug, I'm working on what was supposed to be a senior thesis at USC. And basically the director took this entire year off and said, I'm going to defer and not be at USC for a year. And he's making his senior thesis that USC would not let him make due to the pandemic as an indie film. And so I'm helping to produce that right now, which is going to be really exciting. But kind it's not that we have to do that.
I mean, it's kind of a smart move if you're deferring not to go. So you're saving money and not paying USC.
Yeah.
It's pretty expensive. I applied there when I was looking at colleges, and then I saw like the semester rates.
Yeah.
Insane. I walked onto a set at USC that I wasn't working on or like a part of anything. I just walked on it and then I left it. Or like I kind of got kicked off of it, but it wasn't my fault. It was like somebody was showing us around the set. We didn't want to go on the set. We were like outside of your guys' sound stages.
Like on the sound stages, yeah.
And then it was somebody from Columbia. They're just like, no, come on. Like, I know everybody on the set. You can see it. And we were like, no, but if we get in trouble, it's not our fault. Yeah. And then they're showing us around. And then I think the assistant director kicked us off. And we were just like, he took us. We're not involved.
Yeah.
But because it was me and a couple friends. We were over at the Coliseum because I think we were at a Rams game.
Oh, yeah, that's right behind us.
And we were like, let's go check out USC's film department and just see everything. Mm-hmm. And I was jealous. Because it was like,
big.
Cool. Because like Columbia has the MPC, so it's two sound stages, and USC had like all of those just lined up.
Yeah, we have two sound stages at LMU. We have a TV stage and like a bigger stage.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they're super, it's great. The resources are fantastic when they're available to us, but
but when they're not, it's just
it's frustrating.
It's just crazy times, but there is, I think, like, it's good seeing all these productions start coming out and seeing projects. Because I was talking with Arsenio about it, and we were saying how we want to go film stuff, but it's kind of one of those things where it's like, we don't want to put people at risk, or we don't want to put ourselves at risk if those precautions aren't taken.
Yeah.
Like, we would put those precautions there, but it's one of those things where it's like, you're putting trust in these people to also abide by it, which is not a lot of people do.
Yeah,
well, that's why I think it works out with us, is because, like, we have, like, a team of people that we know we can trust, and so, and they have to send us screenshots, too, though, of their results.
It's very thorough, like, it's not just like, oh, I took it.
Yeah, no.
We like, file it all away, we have them sign release forms, and all that.
That's good. That's the way, like, I would want to do it as well, is, like, being very precautious.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
But I think we might be coming near the end of this episode, unless there's anything else you guys wanted to talk about, anything you have to bring up about Onyx Films.
No, not really. I mean, we have a store.
Yes, you guys do have a store.
Yeah, and Tim supported it.
I know. Thank you, Tim.
You're welcome. I wanted because I have a laptop with my stickers on it, so I wanted to put that on there. Yeah. And then I also need hoodies because it's in Indiana. Yeah. It's getting cold.
Well, yeah. You're going to love the hoodie. It's very soft.
It's so soft. Yeah, we love it. But yeah, we have A Boat Beneath a Moonlit Sky coming out on Halloween. It'll be released on our website. And also, if you follow us on social media, you can find it that way as well. It's going to be really cool. So please.
Our Instagram is at onyx.films. And that's our main one that we use. So you can check us out there.
Just look for it's the claw logo, right? Or like the hand with the nails.
Like a monster claw, yeah.
Yeah. I like the logo a lot.
Thank you. Love it too.
That's why you used it.
Yeah, it was designed by our friend Haley Nash. She's our co-producer. Her friend. And we had no idea what she was going to design.
We gave her nothing to work with. We were like,
yeah, nothing.
I want a logo. And she made this and we were all like, oh my gosh, it's perfect.
That's like it's a gray logo. That's why you guys can get the sticker of it. And then the hoodie is the Noxious one, right?
Yes.
Yeah, hoodie's Noxious. Yeah. Noxious. We're hoping to roll out more merchandise with the logo on it soon.
Yeah. I was bummed because I went to your store and I think I saw one of your posts had a hat with the logo on it. And I was like, I want that, but that's not on the store.
I know. We need to make them. It's just that our producer, Billy, his mom, like, embroiders the hoodies and the hats and stuff. So it's just this woman that's doing it, like, out of her kindness of her heart. So we need to figure out how to, like, mass produce
them. I'll set a meeting with Sharon Gould.
Yeah.
I wouldn't go through your store, but I think I've been looking at, like, Teespring for like merch for the podcast, but it wouldn't go through your website. It would go through Teespring is the thing.
Okay.
But I think from what I've seen from there is you just put your design on whatever you want. And then I think it's free. And then I think you just get some of the profit from anything that gets sold.
Awesome.
But I've been looking because I need to make merch for the podcast. I like kind of announced it a while ago and haven't done anything with it.
Yes, but, please. I'd love to buy one at least.
Yes, I would totally buy some merch.
Yeah, I'm trying to get merch for my show because usually when I have guests on, they like give me like a poster and like we'll sign it, or at least my buddy Brendan did for his movie, and then Max is going to for his movie. So I usually get people's like stuff in my show, but I need to start sending stuff out to them.
Yeah.
I need to look into that. So I'm figuring that out.
Well, awesome. It was great talking to you, Tim.
Yeah, thanks so much for inviting us to be a part of this. We had so much fun.
You're welcome. I remember we were discussing how to get you guys on, and I think you mentioned like the whole Onyx team of 40 people.
Yeah.
And this was already like an hour long. If that all 40 were on, this would be multiple parts.
I know. We've had a couple. We've had one other interview, and like she wanted the whole company on.
And we were like,
it would be fun to do that.
I know.
It would be fun to. I feel like it'd be fun to get everybody on, but it would be one of those things where it's like maybe not enough people would get to talk, or just it'd be kind of hard to manage 40. Like I'm one person managing 40 people, like managing a show.
Oh yeah,
it would be interesting to get like more people on besides just like three people.
Yeah.
Well, maybe in the future we can get the Onyx team back on at some point.
Yeah, if you ever want to do like specific departments too, we could always
Get
some girls from our departments.
That would be great. We'll work stuff out, and then I have your guys' info, and then I have Haley's info as well. So
awesome!
I have the inside at Onyx now.
Yay, the Onyx insider.
I think you guys promoted Onyx, right? Or do you want to, like, one more time before we end it, promote anything, anywhere people can find you guys all at?
Our website is onyx-films.com. Our email is onyx.films.contact@gmail.com for business inquiries only. And our Instagram is @onyx.films.
Perfect. And then thank you guys for being on. This was a lot of fun.
Awesome. Thanks so much, Jen. I will also email you over the recording of this.
Perfect. Let me do my outro real quick.
Cool.
You can find us at Lighting Up the Marquee, Facebook and Instagram, more active on Instagram. Listen to us anywhere you listen to podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, Stitcher, everywhere. And then I will be back in a couple weeks with a new episode. But until then, I'm your host, Tim Martin. This has been Lighting Up the Marquee.